Okay, I am back. This is Meredith, U.S. Program Manager here at Atlas Corps. Really sorry about the technical difficulties to start. Had a little trouble trying to record the call. But now we are ready to start, hopefully maybe one or two of these people online will join us soon, but we might as well just go ahead and get started. So welcome. We really appreciate you joining us today, and just for all your hard work on the selection board in the past and in the near future as well. We're really appreciative. And just a couple quick logistical notes: to press star six in order to mute your line so that any background noise we don't hear. Also, you can use the chat box for any questions you might have, and Scott and I will be looking at that. So just to briefly go over the agenda for the call, we don't need to do any brief updates because Jane was on the call yesterday. Maybe we could just sort of go over them very briefly in case someone's listening to this before the other recording. But then I want to spend more time actually on the interview process and, how to log in, how to go through all the steps, go through our interview template, which has been updated a little bit, and then how to turn in the evaluation after the interview. And then I also want to give, if we have time, to give a little bit of some background about how we use these scores in order to match candidates to host organizations, just some sort of background info so that you can know how we use this, and then just open it up to questions. So, someone types in the chat box that they're in and they can hear music. Hold on, I'm going to respond to them. But Scott, if you wanted to maybe start, if you had any updates you wanted to add.
Sure, I can do that. Hopefully for those that are listening in live or listening to the recording later, I encourage you to also to listen to the previous one on the how to read applications, update and reading applications for some more updates. But super briefly, just to highlight a couple things. There are a couple grants that we announced in the previous one. The most important update I wanted to add on this call is that if you are in the D.C. area, we are doing an event on August 29th, Wednesday, August 29th, which is our Class 10 celebration. I'm hoping to get a lot of the D.C. folks there. Or if you're in Atlanta or other cities in New York and have friends in D.C., it's a great opportunity to come and not just celebrate the arrival of Class 10, but really our success in bringing 10 classes to date. When I mentioned American Express and Sudan before, the one thing I'll mention about the Sudan grant today is that we're expecting this to be public by the end of the month. So it's not public knowledge yet because we haven't got their written paperwork from state. But we expect that the August 29th event, we'll be able to announce that we're getting over $500,000 from the State Department to bring 14 people from Sudan to the U.S. A common question here is, will we also take people from South Sudan? The answer is yes. We take applications from all over the world. And from the selection board, I think the most relevant thing is that we're expecting to be able to be pushing a lot more Sudanese candidates through the process. And to be honest, when you bring 14 people from a country in 1 year, they may not all have the exact same super high caliber. So we're hoping for high caliber, but not necessarily insane caliber. There needs to be a more probably forgiving approach in the interviews because we want to make sure we get a lot of candidates to get through the process. So in general, things about this core are going great. There's a lot going on in August and September, and I really want to make sure to keep you guys in the loop and engaged in as much of it as possible. Did someone else just join the call?
Yes, this is Deanna. Sorry that I'm late.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for joining us, Deanna.
Sure, thanks.
I'll go back on mute and turn it back over to Meredith.
Okay, great. You didn't miss much, Deanna. It was sort of the same update that Scott covered yesterday. So great. So I just wanted to sort of refresh people's memory of the interview process and the steps to follow and sort of go over any challenges in the last cycle and make sure that everyone is clear on the process and any updates in it. So I'm pulling up the selection board handbook and scrolling down to, I think this is page 12, where it starts talking about the interview process. So I'm going to sort of go through this quickly since it is mostly review. So you all should have Skype accounts by now. If not, you know, sign up for free and you can use that. The next thing will be to sign up for an interview time slot. So I need to actually send out a request asking you all to put your times down that you're available. But so when I do that, the way to enter the times that you're available is you're going to have to go to WiseHive and log in and enter your times. So let me do that real quick. The address is here, and I'll have it open on my computer if that doesn't work. So I'm just going to go to wisehive.com, and the address in the selection board handbook is slightly different. That's just their login page. So if you go to wisehive.com, you can just sign in, and I'm going to sign in as one of our selection board members rather than me because there's a little bit more of accessibility for my login account. So I want to log in as, I'm going to log in as Courtney again. So CourtneyBL@gmail.com, and then I'm going to log in. It's the same login as for the reader portal, just @AtlasBoard2! All lowercase. Should be able to log in. For most of you, you'll just see Class 8 U.S. Fellows. Courtney helped us before, so she has another one. But so you click on Class 8 U.S. Fellows. That's really for all our classes since Class 8. So you know, don't be confused by name. And then you want to go to the tab at the top that says Schedule. And this is it. You can actually see the whole schedule, even including last cycle as well. So, you know, don't be confused by that either. To add the times that you're available for interviews, you're going to click this green Add Available Time box here. And one of the changes we're making for this cycle is that the interview time slots are going to be 40 minutes long instead of 30 minutes long. That doesn't mean that your interview has to be longer. Your interview should still be, you know, 25 or 30 minutes. But I think we even mentioned this on yesterday's call. But you know, we want to build in extra time, one, because, you know, there's always connection problems, someone who just is long-winded or you know, anything that might slow down your call that we want to build in extra time for. And two, we want to make sure that you have time to wrap up taking your notes, fill in the evaluation form at the end of it before you go on to the next interview, because a lot of times, you know, you'll have interviews back to back and it can be tough to transition straight from one to the other. So we wanted to give you a little bit of a buffer time for you to wrap up the previous interview and prepare for the next one if you have interviews back to back. So all the time slots you'll enter in will be 40 minutes long, actually. So let's say, let's pretend I'm Courtney now. If I want to enter in my times, I click on this date box, and you can either enter in the dates manually in the text box, or you can click on this calendar. Let's say I'm available August 11th and at 9 a.m., and then you also have to choose an end time. So, you know, I could put my availability for one interview, which would be 9:40. And the weird thing about having the slots at 40 minutes, and this is sort of an unfortunate feature of WiseHive, is that it doesn't space all of them out at 40 minutes. So just be careful of the times you put down. If you put 9 to 10, you could potentially be booked. Here, let me show you how it happens when I do that. Press save, and it'll show up as two interview slots at 9 o'clock and 9:40. But since an interview takes longer than 20 minutes, you know, she wouldn't be done right at 10 o'clock. So just be careful, even if you put availability 9 to 10, this is the way it'll show up. She can also put availability 9 to, you know, 10:40, and that'll show up as three different interview slots, 9, 9:40, 10:20. So just be careful, you know, check after you, even after you've saved the times, you know, what times that actually shows up as. You should be available for the full time slots, 40 minutes after the start time you put down, and be careful. So just be careful of that end time, that it matches up with what you actually want, when you actually want to be done. And then remember to press save after you've entered the times, because otherwise it won't enter them in the calendar. And all this information, or all this information about how to enter your times is in a selection board handbook. But so now that Courtney's times are listed here, it's listed as available to any applicant who logs in to choose a time slot. So an applicant would log in. They wouldn't see Courtney's email address here, but they would like click on time and then schedule it. So once it's scheduled, as you remember, it shows up like these ones down here where there's a name here under the applicant column. So for example, you know, Zach had an interview with Amit at 11:30 on May 31st. And so once someone selected that slot, that's when your interview is scheduled. And before the interview, you should sort of review their application a little bit and click on their name, and it'll take you back to the main screen, which is, you know, this is not actually where you want to end up. So you click on Fellow App, and that will bring you to their fellow application for the person who you're interviewing, for the person you originally clicked on. So here's Amit's full application here, and you can sort of look down. And the things, you know, you don't want to spend a long time reviewing this. That's what the application reader that we assigned to this person is for. But you do want to sort of get sort of a general idea of who this person is, scroll down, and then especially scroll to their background, see, you know, where are they from? Do they have family that you might want to ask about in their interview? Do they have, you know, previous visa denials or passport issues that you might want to ask about in their interview? If you scroll down to the section, it's called accomplishments, but I also have some sort of additional questions here about logistical stuff. You know, can they pay the deposit? Can they provide a medical clearance form? Do they have any special needs? These are the kinds of things that you might want to follow up in the interview about. So after you've reviewed their application, then you'll be ready to conduct the interview. And going back to the schedule briefly, you know, we understand that sometimes your schedule may change and you may need to change what you have written down here. So if no one signed up for your interview slot, like no one signed up for Courtney's August 11th imaginary slots right now, you know, Courtney, if she thinks, oh my gosh, I can't do August 11th at 9 a.m. anymore, she could come in, and if no one signed up for it, she can just delete it right off of there. If someone has signed up for it, like if there were an applicant's name right here, what she should do is, I mean, it's really important that you try and keep your interviews scheduled to the best of your ability, but if she absolutely can't make it, she should email me, meredith@atlascorps.org, and say, you know, I can't make my interview, and you know, can you please, you know, can you please help me reschedule it, or and I'll either, you know, have you just sort of, I'll either find a way for another person or a staff person to take the interview, or I'll just try and reschedule it with the applicant. You know, we'll try and take care of it once you email us. So that's how the scheduling part of it works. I think we're going to, I need to look at the calendar and make sure I know exactly how many hours I'm going to ask you to put down, but it's probably going to be, I think last time we asked for like 2 to 4 hours, and I think it's going to be roughly the same for this cycle, but I'll send out more specifics about what hours to put down. And of course, it's completely flexible. You can do it all in September if you want. You could do it all in August if you want. You know, it's completely up to you guys. But let me send you guys an email to let you know exactly when to put your times down. So I'm going to delete Courtney's slots here just because actually I don't want anyone to choose those slots somehow and then have a missed interview. So going back to our handbook, so that's how you sign up for your interview slot and how you change it if you have to reschedule. I already talked a little bit about pre-interview preparation. You know, you want to sort of look at their application by going to the schedule and make sure that you have written down any specific questions you want to ask them. I see a question here that something I meant to say, and then I'm glad you reminded me. There is no, so someone's asking, is there a way to get friendly reminders from WiseHive, like an automated email reminding us of the interview time and date? We specifically asked about our WiseHive tech guys about this, and they said there's no way to get the automated email. So we started doing last cycle, and we're going to keep doing it this cycle, is trying to send a reminder the day before to everyone who has interviews scheduled for the next day. Just a quick reminder email being like, okay, you're on the schedule for tomorrow. Please remember to log in and to, you know, look at your interviews a little bit before the time slot tomorrow. And even if no one signed up yet, you know, someone could sign up between today and tomorrow, so make sure you check it out. So we're going to try and keep doing that and tell you the day before, like, okay, here's your interview schedule to send a reminder. But I do encourage you to put things on your own calendar as well, so that you remember it and, you know, set up a reminder, whatever you need to do, so that you can make sure you keep that appointment. Because this is sometimes the first impression someone has of Atlas Core, you know, their of in-person impression of Atlas Core that their interview. So it is pretty important. So let's see. So back to the interview preparation. So the next thing to do to prepare for your interview is you're going to want to pull up the interview template, which will, it's revised now, so I'm going to have to repost it on the training site, but pull up the interview template, and for that, and I have it right here, this, I've updated it and I attached it to the last email, so you're going to pull up the template and you should have this saved on your computer so that you can just access it over and over again for all the interviews you do. And then what you're going to want to do and is resave it as something, you know, save it as applicant interview, first name, last name, so, you know, like Jane Doe, and then save it so that, you know, you still have the original on your computer, but then you also have it renamed for to make it easier for you to keep track of and for us to keep track of once you email it to us. So you're going to rename that, and then you're also going to log into Skype and, of course, contact them on Skype and request them to share their contact details with you, which I am pretty sure you all remember how to do. So, and one quick note about about Skype is, you know, sometimes people have connection problems, as you well know, a lot of you experienced in the last cycle. If it's, you know, 3, 10 or so, and no one's contacted you, actually probably even before 10 minutes have passed, like 5 minutes have passed, they still haven't shared their contact details with you on Skype, then you should go ahead and call their mobile phone number, and that is in their application. So when you're looking at their application under contact information, there is their telephone number there, and you can try calling that on Skype as well. But if you can't get a hold of them either way, you know, on Skype or through their phone, just send us an email saying that they missed their interview, and you know, we'll take care of the rest. Great. So, the next part, I just wanted to talk about conducting the interview. So, like I said, even though we've extended the time slot to 40 minutes, it should still take no more than 25 or 30 minutes. And as you probably found out in the last cycle, sometimes candidates can be somewhat long-winded. Feel free to interrupt them and sort of nudge them along, say, I'm sorry, we have a lot to get through. You know, I'm going to need to move on to the next question. It's important not to rush the first part of the interview, the part about terms and conditions. So, so just try to stick to the script in that case, and but also, when you get into the background questions, you feel free to stray a little bit off script and ask for follow-up information, like, oh, that sounds like a really interesting experience. Can you tell me a little bit more about X, Y, and Z? So, if you're running on time and everything. So, I did not mean to pull up GarageBand. So, going to the interview templates, let me just close out this. Going to the interview templates that I've sent out before, and after you've resaved it, you'll notice I've put a bunch of comments here on the side that are just sort of suggestions and tips and everything that Zach and I put in the last template as well. These are good to sort of keep for the first couple times you're doing this again, just as sort of refreshers. But if you want to sort of have a cleaner looking template, you can just, instead of having it final showing markup, you can click final, and then you have sort of a cleaner looking template to look at. And in a newer version of Word, you go to review at the top and change it from final showing markup to final. And that's just a way, if I know all these comments make it look a little bit messy. So if you want to have a cleaner template, that's the way to do that. So going through this template, most of it is the same at the top. I did take out, there's a question here in the beginning where after you ask them, have you read the fellow agreement, that was attached to the last email, and then we ask, do you have any questions about the fellow agreement? I took out that, do you have any questions part, just because, we do want to keep things moving along, and they can ask questions at the end. So, if they have questions right then, say, I have a lot to get through, can we please save the questions till the end and keep moving, just because I don't want to get bogged down too much at the beginning of a 30-minute interview. So, I changed the wording slightly on a couple of these things. Not a big deal. I was just trying to make the language a little bit clearer. One thing I did want to mention here in the terms and conditions part of the interview, you might remember there's a $500 participation fee that Alice Corps fellows have to pay. I didn't change the text of it for Think Tank Links, but you should be aware that the Think Tank Links participation fee is actually just $250 instead of $500. Just because, it's half as long as the Atlas Corps Fellowship. You don't have to necessarily say this, but if they're asking about it as you're going over the terms and conditions, if they're like, wait, I thought it's only $250, I'm Think Tank Links or something, then you can be like, oh, yeah, you're right. It's $250 for Think Tank Links applicants. It's $500 for Atlas Corps Fellows. And the reasoning is just because of the length of the fellowship. And I also add in a note here with this next paragraph about whether you're open to being placed in any city. This is important because Think Tank Links fellows are actually only serving in Washington, D.C. So you can actually, if you have someone who's just applying for Think Tank Links and not Atlas Corps, feel free to skip that question. But so you don't have to ask them if they're open to being placed in any city, because it's just Washington, D.C. But just a brief note there. Applicant background, I did sort of, I did make a couple changes in this section. I changed the wording of, I think we used to say, what are your three strongest transferable skills? I just said here, hard skills, just because it can be so confusing to so many applicants when we say transferable skills. But, just remember, we are looking for hard skills that they could use in a new organization like social media, fundraising, writing, research, hard skills, not so much the, I'm really eager to learn, those kinds of things. You may remember us discussing this last time. So just remember, we are looking for concrete skills there. And if they say those kind of general descriptions in that answer, feel free to prompt them. Okay, I actually mean, concrete skills like social media, fundraising, and so on. And can you give me an example of those? So feel free to prompt them. If they still can't answer the question, then that would be a case where you might want to mark them down in your interview notes. So the other note about that question is that for Think Tank Links candidates, they really should be listing research and possibly even writing or report writing, that kind of thing, here in their to this question, because that is the most important part of the Think Tank Links Fellowship. That's what they'll be doing here, working in a think tank and researching. So it's really important that that's a skill that they consider one of their strong points here. And then the three main social issue areas, also, it's the same question for both Alice Corps Fellows and Think Tank Links Fellows. But again, for Think Tank Links Fellows, they're really focusing on democracy or economic reforms. So I think something in that area, something related to those issues, should be one of the issue areas that they list here in order to be an ideal candidate for Think Tank Links. So if they're listing, political participation or economic reform, microfinance, things like that, if they're listing things like that, great. They could be a good Think Tank Links candidate. If they're listing, things that are not relevant to that, like, I talked about yesterday, treatments for health, things like that, things that aren't related to policy or, politics, economics, those things, maybe they're not such a good fit for Think Tank Links if they answer with that kind of response. And so the rest of it is very similar to before. I did add an additional question here, question six, which is, what is your plan for after the fellowship, and how do you plan to apply the lessons you learn during the fellowship? So this is important for both Alice Corps Fellows and Think Tank Links Fellows. We want them all to return to their home countries, apply the lessons that they learned during the fellowship. And for Alice Corps Fellows, we really want them to return to the nonprofit sector and continue to build up the nonprofit sector in their country and really continue to work in that field, in that sector. For Think Tank Links applicants, it's pretty much the same thing, except, we really want them to return to a research organization. We really want them to continue working in the field of democratic and economic reforms. So that's kind of the standard you should be holding people to when you're judging their responses to that question. The other questions are the same, 7 and 8. This last paragraph here, we talked about it last time, but this is just sort of telling them that, they may have a lot of experience working in the field in their home country, but this fellowship will be mostly in an office. I put for Atlas Corps applicants only here just because if they're a Think Tank Links applicant, they've probably worked mostly in office anyways, and they'll be working mostly in office here. I just don't think it's as relevant for them that they will have had a lot of office experience if they're a good candidate, and they'll continue to have it here, whereas Atlas Corps applicants generally are a lot of people who have been working in the field more and need to be reminded that, hey, this is going to be where you're going to be working mostly in an office environment, and you need to be aware of that. So just a quick note about that warning there. Identity check is basically the same. I just made it a little bit shorter. Asking them if they have any questions, it is really important. If they have questions that you can't answer, or if you run out of time before you can answer their questions, you can tell them, please send an email to apply@atlascorps.org. We check that email year round, and someone can respond to your question there. And then finally, I edited this part five next steps here, just to sort of just update the dates a little bit. We expect that candidates should hear back about their status by the end of November at the latest, because, you know, the placement process can take a while. Even if you're doing the interview in August or September, the placement process and finally getting everything finalized with the host organization can take a long time. So we want to set that expectation that it may be a while before they hear back. And, you know, we try and get back to them as soon as possible, but they should expect to hear by the end of November. And then I update the timeline here in the FAQ section. Not that you have to necessarily go over the whole timeline with them, but if they ask, here is the timeline here at the bottom of page 4 about the timeline for the next few cycles, so that they are aware if they ask about that. And then finally, here's where we get to what to do after the interview. And this is really, really important, because we did struggle with this a little bit in the last application cycle, so I want to make sure it's super clear, because I know it can be a little bit complicated. So there's two things you need to do when you're done with an interview. One, you need to save your notes in this document. You know, and remember, you make sure you've renamed it to applicant interview, first name, last name, and then email it as an attachment to acselectionboard@atlascorps.org. And that's just the email address where we're keeping track of all this stuff. And really, we pay more attention to the second part of this evaluation, where you fill out the form. And I'll talk about that more in a second. But these notes are important to us, because if we ever have a question about the notes that you wrote about that applicant, or we're ever unclear on something, we can go back to those notes, or we can ask you, hey, can you take a look at your notes and see if they mentioned X, Y, and Z? Those notes are just sort of a record of the interview and helps us have sort of a backup in case the evaluation you write is not detailed enough, and if we want to find out more information. But the second part, this is arguably even more important, that you fill out the evaluation Google form. Very, very, very important, because this is how we find out, you know, how did that interview go? How good an applicant is this? So the address is bit.ly/interview-eval. And that links to a Google form where you can give the applicant a score on 1 to 10, and then list their skills and issue areas, which you can just cut and paste from your interview notes here. Then list any red flags and list your comments. So let me show you that real quick. I've already opened up here, but let me just type it in and show you this really does work. bit.ly/interview-eval. So that brings you up here to the survey, post-interview evaluation form. You would enter in the applicant's name and your name. And then here's the whole interview scale. As a reminder, just like 60 is the cutoff on the application score of when you read applications, 60 is the cutoff to qualify. Here, 6 is the cutoff for someone to be considered a finalist. So if you score someone below a 6 on the interview, they will be automatically disqualified. They will no longer be considered for the Atlas Corps Fellowship, and we will not forward them to any host organization, because we don't want someone who is a bad interview to then give a host organization a bad impression. So below a 6, they are done after that. 6 to 10, obviously, 10 being the highest, that person can be considered an Atlas Corps finalist, provided that they pass the other parts of the evaluation, like the reader score. So then you give them a score here, 1 to 10, and then you write 2 to 3 sentences about the interview, explaining the rating you give them. This is really important, just like I said with reading applications, that you give them sort of a 2 to 3 summary, so that I know just at a glance who is this person? What host organizations should I be sending them to? How is their interview? All of that kind of stuff. Their English, their detail in giving answers, their professionalism. Those are the kinds of things to talk about. It's especially important if you're giving someone kind of a bad review, like if you're giving them a 6 or a 7, it's especially important that you tell us why there, because I did see in the last cycle sometimes someone giving an applicant a 6 or a 7, and when I look at the comments, they actually seem pretty positive, and I'm sort of like, ooh, should I send this person on? Like, it seems like they got a mostly positive review, but then they got a 6, and so I don't know what to do with that when there's a 6 or a 7 here, and then a mostly positive review. So make sure you can justify your score in this comments section, and that I can sort of get a snapshot of who this person is and where they might be a good fit. And as I said with the reader review, sort of giving me an impression of like how experienced is this person is really helpful, because that helps me match them to a host organization, whether they're like, 10 years of experience, really needs a high placement, or they seem kind of more entry level. That's helpful here. And if they're more entry level but seem like a great applicant in a number of ways, that they could be really strong if they can find the right fit, that's helpful to me. So that's what to put for comments. Then you can, like I said, list the skills and the interest areas here. Again, these can be cut and pasted from questions. I think I might need to edit this, actually. Questions 2 and 3 of the applicant background section of the portion of the interview. And then finally, any red flags about the applicant. So, it has examples here, obviously, medical issues, inability to pay the deposit, visa denials, all of that. And then, once again, it is really important that you click submit when you're done, because otherwise we do not receive these comments and scores, obviously can't do anything with them then. So that is how to evaluate an interview. Like I said, it's super important that you do both parts. You save your interview notes and email them to us at acselectionboard@alicecore.org, and you fill out the post-interview evaluation form at bit.ly/interview-eval. Both parts are very important to do. And the reason, like I said, the reason why we extended this to 40 minutes interview slots is so that, after the interview, you have a little bit of time there to just do it even right then, or at least, start filling out the form, so that if you have several interviews back-to-back, at the end of it, you can go back, okay, I remember who that person is now, if you're sending in the scores right away, you remember to do it, and you're like, oh yes, I did that. If you wait a couple weeks, you wait longer until you have a free moment, then you might forget, or you might not remember who that applicant is, or you'll have trouble finding it. Like, okay, which interview evaluation form am I missing? Those kinds of things. So I really encourage you to do things right after the interview for your sake as well as ours, just because it can be so hard to keep track of when you guys are doing so many interviews, which I really appreciate. So that's my suggestion in terms of the best way to do it. I just saw a question pop up, and since I'm at sort of a stopping point right now, I figure I'd answer it. So it looks like Scott did. So I want to double check if an applicant can have several red flags but still have a high score. And Scott says yes, they can, and I absolutely agree with that. That's a good point, that someone could have visa denials but still be awesome in every other way. I encourage that. Like Scott's saying here, red flags are things we need to pay attention to, but don't necessarily mean that they'd be a bad fellow, and don't necessarily mean that they'd be disqualified either. They just are something that we need to take a closer look at and be wary of. So that's a great point, whoever asked that question, and thank you, Scott, for answering it. So going back to the selection handbook, I just want to make sure we've covered everything here in the everything here in the selection handbook. there's some tips here that you want to remember. I've been over most of this, but one important tip here is that there's an FAQ section on the training site, the Google site, and there's a link here in the fellow handbook. So it's good to sort of look over that FAQ section of the website before you conduct your first interview again, because it'll remind you of some of the questions you might get from an applicant so that you can try and answer their questions themselves. I've been over most of the stuff here, but I encourage you to look over it again. One of the most common challenges you'll run into with interviews or weak interviews styles that you'll see will be one of these two styles that we've listed here on page 17. Either that they'll be long-winded, rambling, unfocused, or they'll be brief and lacking detail. So if they're long-winded, you need to try and encourage them to be concise, to move it along. If they're really brief, feel free to sort of prompt them, be like, oh, can you give me some more detail about that? But at a certain point, if you've prompted them once in the interview and then they still keep doing it, then that's a sign that this is kind of a not-so-good interview, that you can dock points after you've prompted them to sort of either be more concise or more detailed. And if they still keep doing it, then feel free to sort of mark them down on your interview evaluation, because that's a sign that they could give a host organization the wrong impression and all of that. So, and then the last tip we have here is just sort of just a reminder to trust your instincts. There's no such thing as the good answer or the bad answer. There's a lot of variation here, but you saw in the last cycle the kinds of things we're looking for, and now that you've seen a number of applicants, you probably have a better idea even now of what makes a good interview and what doesn't. So I really trust you guys' judgment there. And then the last page we have here in our handbook is an interview checklist. These are all really good things to cover in your comments section of the post-interview evaluation form. Was the interviewee professional? Did they make good eye contact? Were they engaged, interested, well-prepared? Did they give concrete answers? Are they a good fit for Atlas Core in terms of the mission and whether this is the right step for them? And this is especially important as you're trying to distinguish between Atlas Core applicants and Think Tank Links applicants. If someone is applying for both programs, this is where you might think about, oh, is this person a good fit for Atlas Core, for Think Tank Links, or both? Someone could be a good fit for one but not the other, even if they have applied to both. So that's a good place in the interview evaluation form, the comments section right here on the form, to give us feedback about which program you think is the best fit for them. So great. So that's all I wanted to cover about the interview process. And then I wanted to briefly go over how we use these scores, and then I'll open it up to questions. I just sort of wanted to cover, go over here how these scores get inputted into our system and how we're using them, and hopefully this will inform how you're writing these comments. So here is actually our gigantic spreadsheet. I'm going to try to describe this as best as I can so those of you who are just listening rather than viewing it. We have this huge spreadsheet where we keep track of all the people who make it to the interview stage in each class. And then here at the bottom you see class 10 finalists, class 9 finalists, class 8 finalists, and so on. And we have their name here. And then we have one section that is solely for the interview, and these are taken straight from the Google form, these skills, interest areas, their score, their comments, red flags, taken straight from the interview form. And then if you scroll to the right even more, you'll see on the same line, here's all our reader comments. And here's the score. You can see if we have an application read by two readers, here's the first reader comments, here's the second reader comments, and we have the readers listed here. And those comments and scores are taken directly from the rubric that you fill out on WiseHive. So all the information you put in is put straight into our spreadsheet, and we keep track of all the scores here. So when a host organization gives us a profile that they're looking for, we can sort of search the spreadsheet, look through it, and hopefully find a good match for them. And if someone gets a bad score, I mean, they would still be here in the spreadsheet, but actually since we've sort of closed and finalized the finalist class for Class 10 and all these other classes, we've moved them over to a spreadsheet that is just not qualified and withdrawn the applicants. So, but normally they'd be here as well in the finalist page. So, you know, this is how we sort of keep track of all the interviews and reviews that you guys are so wonderfully sending in with us. Hopefully that gives you a little bit of insight to our process. And then the next thing that we do is we try and keep track of all the finalists in what we call the finalist matrix. I'm opening this up here. This is a way for us to sort of figure out the intersection of different qualities of an applicant and find how do they match with a profile of a host organization. You can see several tabs here at the bottom: skill and region, issue and region, and issue and skill. These are all pulled off of their WiseHive application. You know, we download a report that includes the applicant's name, their region, their skills and interest areas, and then we put them into this database. So, for example, you know, if we're looking at Latin American candidates who have skills in economic development, we can just look in this square of the spreadsheet and see, oh, here are four finalists, and here's their country, the class that they applied for, their interview score, and their application score here. And so if a host organization is looking for that, I can be like, oh, look, Maria Pantoja from Colombia, from class 10, she got a score of a 9 on her interview and a 79 on her application score. She might be a great fit for this host organization that's looking for a Latin American expert on business development. And that helps us find them. And then you can see, you know, this also allows us to see where we have a lot of applicants. For example, a lot of African experts on monitoring and evaluation. We just have a ton of them, and that's awesome. And some that we have fewer of. So this allows us to see where we're strong and where an applicant fits into the grand scheme of things. And then, as you can see, issue and region, you know, we can look for an Eastern European who specializes in gender and women's issues and just go directly to that square and find 9 candidates who fit that profile. And, you know, I wouldn't just automatically send these to a host organization. I'd also look up their application and make sure that they really, truly are a good fit for that profile, but that's sort of how we can at least get a short list of candidates. And a lot of times there will be several different boxes that I'll be looking up. You know, a Latin American who specializes in civic engagement and poverty, you know, multiple things that a host organization might be looking for. And then the third one is issue and skill. And this is actually usually the most useful one for me because this is where you can find the intersection of skill sets and their interest areas. Someone who specializes in civic engagement and business development, oh, look, we have 8 candidates who have told us that those are 2 things that they specialize in. And I can sort of, you know, at least have a starting point of where to look for candidates. So that's sort of an overview of what we do with this information, how we're using it to match these candidates to host organizations. I'm sorry if you're listening to this later and you don't quite have the visual, but I tried to. Hopefully you get at least sort of the impression of how we're using this information. So that wraps up all I wanted to cover. First, I'm going to ask Scott if he has anything to add, and then I can answer any questions.
No, I think it's great, Meredith. It's so much information, and I know it's hard to get through in an hour. Mm-hmm. That matrix, I actually haven't seen it in a couple months. It's just awesome. And I think it really shows, even if you're just listening to it, each interview, each conversation, each notes that you take end up translating into, we manage this information quite well, and then that information ends up helping us connect to host organizations and ends up resulting in fellows. So it's all part of a process, and the role that the selection board members play in interviewing people and taking good notes, getting through those questions is just so important. So thank you for this review.
Yes, absolutely. We are so appreciative of all the time you take to write your comments, which almost all you, I mean, everyone did like a really great job of writing detailed comments last time. So I really appreciate that, and that helps us as a staff a lot, and it results in fellows, like Scott said. You know, when this Class 10 will be joining us this month, that's because of all the awesome work that you guys are doing and helping us. So just 2 minutes left before 2 o'clock. Are there any questions? You know, Deanna and Jane, what was the hardest part of interviewing for you? Is there anything you want me to cover in addition to what I already talked about? And you can enter things in the chat box or you can unmute.
Hey, this is Jane. I think for me, the showing us all the way to the finalist matrix is a good conclusion to see how it all ends up. I think you've covered everything. Thank you so much.
Oh, great. Yeah, I'm glad that you are able to sort of see the back end here and how this information gets put to use. I think this is Deanna in the chat box. Thank you for sharing the matrix. It's nice to see where the information goes after providing our input. Awesome. So, just thank you guys so much. This is how we use this information. It's really helpful to us. We really appreciate you taking the time to input all this information and follow all these detailed tips that we're giving you, which I know is a lot to take in and a lot of sort of nitpicky details, but they all help us a lot in what we do here. So thank you so much. We'll be posting a recording of this program later. If you have any further questions, just send me an email. You all have my email address. And I'll also be sending out an email very soon about interview times and putting down your interview availability. Let me know if you have any troubles with that. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you, Meredith. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Okay. I'm going to stop recording now.